It's 2:06 on the John Phillips Show, Talk Radio 790 KABC, broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wangs, the sports desk across the glass.
John, almost immediately after the breaking decision from the Supreme Court on Roe versus Wade happened on Friday, Gavin Newsom put together a press conference. A lot was said, but the biggest takeaway is that he's very mindful.
I am, though, very mindful that California can play an outsized role at this moment. I'm mindful of the fact that we punch above our weight. I'm mindful that this state is the largest and most diverse state in the world's most diverse democracy. I'm mindful of our history, our proud past, where we have led.
I don't know if I've ever told you this before, but my friend Curtis is a magician. In fact, he was on the Paris Hilton reality show, and he was the one that sawed her in half. And way back when, he used to have a very lucrative career traveling on the road as a magician. And he would travel all over the globe. He would go to Asia. He would go to Australia. You name it. He performed there. And he told me that one of the venues told him, he was a booked guest on Wake Up Shanghai or wherever city he was in. And the owner of the venue said, "Every time you mention the venue in your interview, I'll give you $100. And that was part of the deal. And he showed me a clip of his interview on this morning show, and it sounded less ridiculous than Gavin Newsom using the word mindful.
That is something we are mindful of.
800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222. It is a pleasure to welcome our next guest to the program. You can follow him on Twitter at TheArmedLiberal. The Armed Liberal himself, Mr. Mark Danziger. Mark, happy Monday.
Happy Monday. How are you, John? Anything going on in the world today?
All right. Well, since Randy just played a clip of Gavin Newsom, let's start with him. He is trying to position himself nationally after the Supreme Court decision on abortion last week as the face of the Democratic Party, as the leader of the opposition. He has been hypercritical of Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic Party, Chuck Schumer, but not by name, just by implication. And he is trying to present himself as a national figure who is the next generation of Democrats who has the fire in his belly to fight like the 80-year-olds don't have because they're too old and decrepit to do it. What do you make of this strategy, and how offended do you think privately people like Biden and Pelosi and Schumer are at Newsom's antics?
So you got to know that people, and I'm not speaking from personal knowledge, but I'm, you know, hypothesizing that people like Newsom have been singing Hail to the Chief to themselves in the mirror since they were like 13 years old. And I'm sure right now, every morning when he shaves, you know, he's sort of, you know, going down the presidential walk-in song. So yeah, I think he's definitely positioning himself. When the mainstream press is writing things about, should Biden really be the nominee in 24? And we're seeing this in the New York Times. We're seeing it in the Atlantic. We're seeing it in places that are not widely known as being hypercritical of the Democratic Party mainstream. It's going to be an interesting and open race. And he's, you know, the about to be reelected governor of the largest state in the country, of the source of most of the money that goes into the Democratic Party. I think you've got to take him kind of semi-seriously as a candidate until the debates show up and he starts talking. And I think that someone like a Sherrod Brown, right, would basically dribble him around the debate stage and dunk him and, you know, and then sit down and do it again for 3 points. He definitely is positioning himself. I can't imagine how he thinks he's going to actually make anything happen with it, but I wish him luck.
It's strange to me. Well, it's actually not strange to me. His window right now as a national figure is this upcoming presidential election, because after this election, he's not going to be the governor of California. He's going to be the former governor of California. And it's much easier to run when you're naturally making headlines on a regular basis, as opposed to trying to create artificial means of being a newsmaker, which is pretty much what you have to do if you're a former office holder. One of the things that he plans on doing this November to keep abortion on the front page of the newspaper is put an initiative on the ballot that would essentially liberalize abortion laws in California that include late-term abortions, because that's the most left-wing position you can take on the subject that would, I guess, make him popular with the people he's trying to excite. However, even though that works in California and that will likely pass, that may not play in Iowa. It might not play in New Hampshire. It certainly isn't going to play in South Carolina, even with Democratic voters there who are largely churchgoers. What do you make of that move, and do you think he's overplaying his hand?
I think he's overplaying his hand, and the reason I say that is that the biggest news of the 24 election cycle is Latino and Asian voters looking at the Democratic Party kind of quizzically. And you're seeing, you know, polling numbers that if you read people who are kind of about polling and the underlying data of what's going on, is terrifying them about where the party's going to go, because you're seeing Latino voters massively defect from the Democratic Party. And even if they aren't actively leaving and becoming Republicans, their level of support for the party is dropping like a rock. You're seeing Asian voters whose level of support for the party is dropping dramatically. And in both of those cases, right, the issues are some core Democratic progressive constituency issues. It's immigration, right, uncontrolled immigration at the border, and it's education, because both of those groups see education as a path up for their kids, and both of them are directly competed with by, you know, illegal folks who people hire here. And so, you know, if the Democratic Party wants to really, you know, double down on very late-term abortion and on super expansive abortion rights that are well beyond the rights that are available in say, Europe, those audiences who are already kind of sketchy on the Democratic model are more likely to walk away. And I think, you know, the California Republican – I mean, is there really a California Republican Party today? I mean, does it actually exist, or is it just a P.O. box? Because if they had a brain – they would be all over these audiences publicly and visibly in ways that I'm certainly not seeing, but maybe I'm not on the right mailing lists. And I got to believe that if they would organize unbelievably hard in California around that, and that it would be hurtful to California candidates in any kind of marginal districts.
As someone who's worked in Democratic administrations, who attends Democratic fundraisers, you know these people, you know who's making the decisions. Who are the shot callers in the Democratic Party right now? Is it left-wing whites? Is it minorities? Is it the unions? Who's calling the shots right now?
I think it's a war, and that's why the Democratic Party's, you know, stance on so many things is so unclear. And I say this not to point fingers at any particular person or demographic, but, you know, there are a bunch of people my age, which is 60s, who live in places like Brentwood, who can afford, which is a ritzy neighborhood in L.A., for those of you who aren't in L.A. listening, who can afford to write large checks to the Democratic Party, whose lives are pretty well insulated from the problems that are being created today. Their kids are adults. Their kids are prosperous. They don't bear the cost of bad policing because they have private security or they have alarms, and you know, they live in high-rise buildings with security. And so what you wind up with is a population of people who are the check writers that support the institutions of the party, who are kind of mind that this is all great and this is rah-rah. And then you have the people who work in the institutions of the party who need that money to stay afloat, right, to buy their Volvo and go out and do the things that they want to do. And or who are very young and very ideological, and they're basically, yeah, we'll go along with this. And so that axis from Brentwood to Alexandria, D.C., is kind of the axis that's controlling things in the party, and that terrifies me. You know, I'm a labor Democrat, if you describe me, right? It's like I want the AFL-CIO to kind of be the, you know, the strong arm of the Democratic Party. I want ILWU to be the strong arm of the Democratic Party again. And they're not, I don't think, today.
We're speaking with Mark Danziger, the Armed Liberal, who you can follow on Twitter at The Armed Liberal. Mark, in response to the Supreme Court decision, we've seen corporations that aren't looked at as being partisan or being inherently political, taking hard political stances on the Supreme Court decision, including the NBA, Alaska Airlines, and Starbucks. And Starbucks was a really interesting case because Starbucks came out and said, we support the right of our employees to have abortions if they want them, and we will pay for your travel expenses if you have to travel to another state to have an abortion. And the same thing is true if you want to have a sex change operation, but you'll only be able to get those benefits if you promise not to unionize.
Yeah, that was hysterical. That was hysterical. But think about this. I'll give you $4,000 to travel to another state and have an abortion, but I won't give you $4,000 in parental benefit for childcare for your kid. I won't give you parental leave so that you can stay home and, you know, and mind your kid if they're sick. You know, it's this performative liberalism that sort of, you know, is crazy making here, because it's sort of like if they really wanted to positively impact their employees' lives, they would say, hey, you know what? Here's $4,000 for everybody. If you're a parent, here's money. If you need an abortion, you want to travel out of state, here's money. But it's the symbolism that they're buying into, and they're not necessarily positively impacting the lives of the people they ought to positively impact.
Well, it's just such a bizarre dichotomy to me, because they want to come out and they want to beat their chest and they want to brag about how woke they are when it comes to abortion or trans rights or those subjects. But man, when it comes to their own bottom line, they will crush the union if they have an opportunity.
Absolutely. 100%. You know, Disney, I mean, you know, Disney, I'll joke about for a minute, which is, and the interesting thing that I'll point to is, you're starting to see a strong Republican reaction to sort of corporate activism like this. You know, I got to say that DeSantis has probably stirred Disney down in Florida. And my guess is that you will see Disney be much quieter politically than it has been historically without the air cover, because DeSantis basically said, oh, you know, you want to play in politics? Well, we play in politics, too. Let's play. And I think that you're going to start seeing pushback on a lot of this from a lot of places. And I think that that's hopefully going to drive, you know, business leaders to say, you know, this is about my customers, my employees, and my stock price. What am I going to do to maximize the benefit to my customers, my employees, and my stock price, rather than taking these postures that people like on Twitter or in the New York Times?
How much does Twitter and social media give corporations an alternate reality or make them believe that their customer base is different than it actually is? Because you see this happen with politicians. You see politicians who theoretically know better come out and take outrageous positions on issues because they don't want to irritate the Twitter mob. But the Twitter mob is not the electorate in places like, oh, I don't know, Arizona or West Virginia or other states that don't necessarily have to vote a party line for the Democratic Party. They're purple states, or in the case of West Virginia, red states. If Joe Manchin were to listen to Twitter, they would run him out of town on a rail. Him ignoring Twitter is the only thing that makes him electorally viable in that state. But it seems like corporations make the same mistake that politicians do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they do. I mean, I made that mistake, right? I was a supporter of Michael Schallenberger in the recall vote. I don't know if you know who he was.
So was
he's
I.
Interesting. He's, you know, kind of another kind of reprobate liberal like me. And, you know, he looked very strong on Twitter. He looked like he had a big presence. There were a lot of supporters there. And I think he hit 3.4% in the actual vote.
Yeah. No one voted for him except for us.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
To that point, in California, We went to bed on election night thinking that Rick Caruso was going to finish comfortably ahead of Karen Bass. We thought certain things in other races. We thought Gil Cedillo was going back to the L.A. City Council. And then 3 weeks later, when we stopped paying attention to it, oh, guess what? The abolish the police woman is going on the city council. Oh, guess what? Karen Bass finished way ahead of Rick Caruso. And you have to say to yourself, in a time and place where people don't trust any institution that has any kind of power, the fact that it takes them a month to count the votes and the actual results are so different from what they told us on election night, it's as if they were trying to destroy whatever public trust remained for the system, the voting system here in California. And we're the home of Silicon Valley. If there's any place where you should be able to count the votes in a day, it's California. Yet they're perfectly happy to take off holidays, take off Sundays. Oh, it'll take a month. We'll get around to it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something I know a lot about. I was friends with Deborah Bowen, who was the Secretary of State, and who I think very rightfully blocked the use of a bunch of really insecure and fraud, you know, available voting technology and did some other really good stuff. I, you know, watched this stuff closely. We had my personal city council race in the city of Torrance was just decided by 17 votes out of over 7,000. So I've been paying a lot of attention to this. I still don't see anything that looks like concrete evidence of anything that I would call fraud. I've seen D'Souza's, I've seen the documentary, right, 2000 Mules. I think that there's a lot of stuff that makes you kind of queasy and makes you not feel good about the process. And I think that restoring utter transparency and absolute faith in the voting process should be the first thing on everybody's agenda in government right now. Because we have to heal, right? We've got to get our two challenged sides to like talk to each other and act like we share a country. And if both sides, right, have in the last, you know, 7 years been jumping up and down yelling, this election was stolen by the Russians, or this election was, you know, stolen by, you know, by the Democrats, or was stolen by whoever, and claiming illegitimacy for the people who were elected, it's cancer. I mean, it's a fatal disease if it's not caught and arrested, and we're going to run out of time to catch it and arrest it soon.
Mark Danziger, the Armed Liberal. You can follow him on Twitter at The Armed Liberal. Thanks so much for stopping by. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
You too. I'm doing something very dangerous right now.
What is that?
Well, I'm working out of the studio today, and I finished my LaCroix, and I'm still thirsty, and I have about a third of a cup of coffee left from this morning. And I never allow myself to have any caffeine after 10 o'clock in the morning, because if I do that, there's a good chance I'm going to turn into Margot Kidder later on in the day. And I'm thirsty, and I don't necessarily want another full LaCroix, so I'm just drinking the coffee. So there's a good chance I'm not going to bed tonight.
This is a terrible idea.
Just FYI. So if I sound a little weird tomorrow, you know why. 800-222-KABC is the number, 1-800-222-5222. We've taken great pleasure in going through the disastrous interview that George Gascon gave with KTLA, but there was one that we left out, and this came up later on in the interview where Gascon was asked, "You ruined San Francisco. Why should we think that anything's going to be different here in Los Angeles?"
Well, so, yeah, okay, that's fair. Let's be real. You said that you know how to make communities safe. You were the district attorney in San Francisco.
Mark Messner's pissed.
Oh, yeah.
If you look at a book just published by Michael Schellenberger, he's documented.
Hey, Schellenberger gets a shout out.
That's two shout outs on the show today.
If you look at a book just published by Michael Schellenberger, he's documented what's happened in the city of San Francisco. It's turned into a mess. And now look at the crime numbers here in L.A. County. Are crime numbers up since you've taken office? Because if they are, I don't know if you can say that you know how to keep communities safe. Is that an accurate thing to say?
Well, look, crime numbers started to go up in L.A. in 2020 before I was a district attorney.
This was never my fault. This was this was soft on crime Jackie Lacey. Jackie Lacey was only soft on one criminal, and that was Ed Buck.
Well, he's so woke, this George Gascon, so woke that he's blaming the black chick for all of his problems.
Well, look, crime numbers started to go up in L.A. in 2020 before I was a district attorney. Crime numbers in San Francisco actually are lower and were lower under the past DA than they were when I left. Again, you know, look, I get the frustration and I get that there is certainly a level of violence that has increased around the country in L.A. But what I'm telling you is that when you compare us to other jurisdictions, we're actually on par or doing better.
So this is a loser's argument because all of us live here and we see what we see with our own two eyes. We know that Los Angeles is not safer than it used to be. You talk to anyone who lives in San Francisco, they will tell you that city is more dangerous now than it was 10 years ago. But if you just say, no, it's not, you just don't understand.
And he used the argument, well, we're safer than other places. It doesn't matter to anybody living in Los Angeles County that there's more murder in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Los Angeles is a safe town. You could be in Ukraine having bombs dropped on top of you. So it could be worse.
This is not driven by crime. This is driven by people that are capitalizing on the fear.
What?
Capitalizing on the fear.
Well, I think he's trying to tie this back to the recall without saying the recall, but it is an accurate statement to say that criminals capitalize on fear.
Yeah.
This is not driven by crime. This is driven by...
So the rise in crime is not driven by crime.
So this guy, I've been noticing how he's performed in the Larry Mantle interview and this interview and even the propaganda videos that he puts out. I know his tics. Whenever you talk about his failures, what he does is he pivots and he says, crime's not actually going up, crime's going down, but I understand why people are concerned. I understand that my opponents are essentially existing on scaring people and a fear campaign. And I'm a police officer and I know how to keep people safe. And you just can't shake them from repeating those same points over and over and over again. He doesn't engage with the question. He doesn't engage with the person that he's interacting with. He just repeats one of those three or four things over and over and over again.
Well, and I keep trying to figure out what the point is here for him to do these interviews if he comes off this badly at them.
No, with him, and for those of you who listen on a regular basis, I'm not Chris Matthews. I'm not someone who talks over guests who are on the show. My attitude, generally speaking, is you're an invited guest on my show. I will treat you on the show the same way I would treat you at dinner if I were to invite you in my house. If I ask you a question, I'll let you answer it and let the people know what you think. Now, that strategy doesn't work for everyone. For most people, yes. But for George Gascon, no. You got to cut him off and you got to hold his feet to the fire and you got to bring him back to whatever it is that the question was because he's not going to answer it. He has no interest in answering it. He's an ideological extremist. And the thing about ideological extremists, which is true for people who are ideologically extreme on the left and people who are ideologically extreme on the right, they don't see themselves as being extreme. They see themselves as being the one that's ahead of the curve, that they know more about the subject than you do. And they are perfectly happy to tell you what they think if you just ask them the question in the right way. It's one of the reasons that cancel culture is so stupid. If you want to know that someone has extreme boutique beliefs, you don't have to trick them into telling you that. They are perfectly happy to tell you that. If someone thinks 9/11 is an inside job, it's not like you have to lay a trap. That's the first thing that'll come out of their mouth.
They usually have the bumper sticker.
Oh, yeah. If someone's part of the Klan, you don't have to wait until minute 45 in the conversation for them to tell you that they're a member of the Klan. They want to tell you that they're a member of the Klan. It's not something that they're ashamed of. It's something that they're proud of. George Gascon wants to destroy public safety in Los Angeles County. So you just got to ask the right questions because he really does believe it. And you got to cut him off, and you got to keep bringing him back to it. And if you keep bringing him back to it, he'll tell you exactly what he thinks.
This is not driven by crime. This is driven by people that are capitalizing in the fear and the vulnerabilities of our community, and now they're trying to address the real issues. If this was about violence, for instance, San Francisco would continue to have the same district attorney. Violence in San Francisco is down.
They just recalled their district attorney by double digits. You know what this conversation is like? It's like you point at the sky and you go, that's blue. And he goes, no, it's not. It's yellow. If you just look at the statistics, you will understand that the sky is yellow. And you say, no, but I'm looking at it right now and it's clearly blue. No, it's not. It's yellow. Well, let me go stop a man on the street and ask him what color the sky is. Sir, well, you can't do that anymore. Hey, you, what color is the sky? Oh, it's blue. Well, he just believes the campaign that's out there that's propaganda. You know, you have all of these out-of-state billionaires that come in and they want to convince everyone the sky is blue. And of course, people are going to believe it because if they just understood that the sky is yellow, they would tell you that the sky is yellow. And I know the sky is yellow, but I understand why people think it's blue. The rubes get easily manipulated by billionaires. That's the argument he's making. He is such a bad person. John Hatami is right. Let me tell you, George Gascon, there are people who are out there who are just incompetent, who aren't good at their job, and I would certainly put you in that category. But beyond you being a boob, you're also a very, very, very demented person.
Like, one of the rules in covering politics is you don't assume malice with anybody. You assume people are incompetent. You assume people are misguided or misinformed. With Gascon, no, there's malice there.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who hurt him. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know if he was traumatized, if he got passed over for a job, and now his lifelong ambition is to destroy public safety. But you, sir, are pure evil.
You know, when you go to therapy, typically you find out that a source of a lot of your problems is a deep-seated resentment of your parents. You know how mad he is at his dad from taking him away from Castro?
Oh, yeah. If he could only live in the people's paradise of Cuba, he'd have year-round fantastic weather. He'd have socialized health care. You disagree with someone, you just throw them in prison. It's wonderful. I'm telling you, pure evil.
Look, it's horrifying.
I had the KTLA news on earlier, which means that Maury is now on my screen. And Maury is on my screen while I do this show fairly often. Have you ever noticed that they never have an attractive panelist? I don't want to be insulting, but they're all gargoyles. Anyway, here with an update on the warden, Mr. Randy Wang.
So I follow a lot of really weird inside things on Twitter to find out just the geekiest political news you could possibly find. And on an account that I follow that tracks political ad buying, California Governor Gavin Newsom just placed a statewide cable ad buy in Florida with ads that start airing on July 4th.
Do we know what this ad buy is about?
I would assume it's Gavin Newsom taking shots at Ron DeSantis, although he calls him DeSantos. Maybe it's Gavin Newsom saying, where the hell's the Democratic Party? Or maybe, just maybe, Gavin Newsom watches so much cable news that he wants to be able to see his own face in the commercial breaks.
He is trying to frame this. He must think that DeSantis is going to be the Republican nominee. And he's trying to get the media to frame this as an upcoming DeSantis versus Newsom contest. That's what he's doing. And he's hoping that DeSantis takes the bait and that the media takes the bait. And that's how they start framing the contest. Because from his point of view, that's a twofer. A, it's going to cause Trump's head to explode because it's going to make it seem like Newsom is just bypassing Trump altogether and going after DeSantis because he's the guy who's going to be the Republican nominee. And it could get DeSantis to take the bait because DeSantis is going to fire back if he's being attacked in his own backyard. And it's going to elevate Newsom to be a national figure because, ooh, why is he buying ads out of state?
Maybe it'll be a public service announcement. Hey, Floridians, it's Gavin Newsom. Your boyfriend knocked you up. Come to California.
We got plenty of chop shops here. There's a 9-month wait, but we've got room for you. It's 2:53. This is Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast, wherever you listen.